You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire. Russian ISPs blocked Google News as tension with the Wagner Group mounted. Ukrainian hacktivist auxiliaries break into Russian radio broadcasts. New EU sanctions are directed against Russian IT firms. Transparent Tribe resurfaces against Indian military and academic targets. Unauthorized access continues to be the leading cause of data breaches. A Trojanized Super Mario Brothers game spreads malware. Rick Howard speaks with Director of Amazon Security, Jenny Brinkley. Paul Rabasti of Lockheed Martin describes the Code Quest competition. And law enforcement agencies seize the web domain of breach forums. I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire Intel briefing for Monday, June 26th, 2023. Internet Observatory NetBlocks found that five Russian ISPs blocked Google News on Friday as tensions between the Wagner Group and the Ministry of Defense rose during the run-up to the Wagnerites' abortive march on Moscow. Google News has been blocked before, the New York Times observes, most prominently in March of 2022 when Roskomnadzor announced an interdict of the service after Google blocked some online content that spread disinformation in support of Russia's war against Ukraine. The Wagner Group's march on Moscow may have been abandoned yesterday, but internal tensions remain high. Expect information operations to remain prominent in coming days, and see the coverage on thecyberwire.com for daily updates on the hybrid war in Ukraine. Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty reports that Ukrainian operators have increasingly hacked into Russian radio broadcasts to insert pro-Ukrainian messages. When the current wave began in early June, the message was that Russia had declared full mobilization and martial law in response to a large-scale invasion of Russia. Outrageous as they were, the messages gained enough traction to draw an official denial from Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov. Computing reports that the 11th round of European Union sanctions enacted against Russia will hit that country's IT sector particularly hard. The European Council singled out companies holding a license from the FSB authorizing them to work at the Russian security level of state secret, as well as companies holding a weapons and military equipment license from Russia's Ministry of Industrial and Trade. It's not just their work on conventional military systems that puts them on the EU's list. The Council has also assessed that information warfare constitutes a key means by which Russia implements its war of aggression against Ukraine and commits gross violations of international law and the principles of the Charter of the United Nations. SideCopy, a subdivision of the Pakistan-aligned threat actor Transparent Tribe, is targeting the Indian Army and India's education sector. Researchers at SecRight said in their report on the activity, there are three infection chains with themes utilized. DRDO's Invitation Performa, which is part of its defense procurement procedure, a honey trap lure, and also the Indian military with selection of officers for foreign assignments theme. The ongoing campaign came to light after a senior DRDO scientist was arrested for leaking sensitive information to Pakistani agents who honey-trapped him. ForgeRock's 2023 Identity Breach Report was released on June 22nd, and it shows that at least 1.5 billion user records were exposed in 2022. 53% of all breaches that occurred in 2022 were from third-party organizations and cost, on average, $9.4 million per breach. Unauthorized access, responsible for 49% of the data breaches, was determined to be the leading cause of breaches for the fifth consecutive year. Ransomware, however, at 34%, is on the rise. ForgeRock blames companies' misconfiguration of cloud services, firewalls, and human error as the main factors contributing to the breaches. The healthcare industry seems to have been the most heavily affected in 2022, showing a 12% increase from 2021's attacks, with education and financial services in second and third place, respectively. ForgeRock says this mirrors the headlines regarding data breaches. One sector the report calls out is insurance. They say, despite being a highly regulated part of the financial services sector, the insurance industry is increasingly being targeted by cybercriminals. They exploit the vast amounts of PII stored in outdated systems, the lack of user training, and the slow adoption of strong authentication. In 2022, while attacks on the financial services sector decreased by 28.6% compared to the previous year, nearly half of all breaches, at 47%, affected the insurance industry. ForgeRock also found that generative AI was a leading factor in allowing threat actors to create higher quality phishing schemes and other forms of social engineering like malicious voice and video impressions. To counter this rise in data breaches, ForgeRock recommends that along with implementing passwordless authentication and implementing a zero-trust framework, companies should leverage AI and intelligent decisioning for all identities across the identity lifecycle. Ultimately, as the use of generative AI in malicious attacks grows, the ability of a customer or employee to detect such attacks shrinks. Using AI as a defensive measure for pattern recognition and incident response may offer some promise in protecting accounts. A Trojanized version of the Super Mario game installer is being used to deliver the XMR crypto miner, the Supreme Bot mining client, and the Umbral Stealer, according to researchers at Cybel. The researchers explain, threat actors use game installers to spread various malware because games have a wide user base, and users generally trust game installers as legitimate software. The social engineering tactics that threat actors use exploit users' trust and entice them to download and run malicious game installers. The large file size and game's complexity provides threat actors opportunities to hide malware within them. The researchers add, this incident highlights another reason threat actors utilize game installers as a delivery mechanism. The powerful hardware commonly associated with gaming provides valuable computing power for mining cryptocurrencies. So, you might say it's just cryptojacking, but that can mean game over for your device's resources, like being snuffled up by a bunch of Koopa Troopas. And finally, here's one more story with a gamer reference. 3 months after apprehending alleged Breach Forum's impresario Pom Pom Purim, whose real name is Connor Fitzpatrick, on a range of cybercrime charges, U.S. authorities have seized the illicit service's web domain. As is customary in such takedowns, the domain now displays a banner saying that the site is under new management, specifically the FBI, the Office of Inspector General at the Department of Health and Human Services, and the Department of Justice, acting under a warrant issued by the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia. The action against Breach Forums was both interagency and international, The Bureau shares credit for the operation with the U.S. Secret Service, Homeland Security Investigations, the New York Police Department, the U.S. Postal Inspection Service, the Dutch National Police, the Australian Federal Police, the U.K. National Crime Agency, and Police Scotland. Bleeping Computer points out that the Bureau did a bit of visual crowing. The image of Pompompurum, a golden retriever from the Hello Kitty universe that graced the site, now sports a pair of handcuffs. Coming up after the break, Rick Howard speaks with Director of Amazon Security, Jenny Brinkley. Paul Rabasti of Lockheed Martin describes the CodeQuest competition. Stay with us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. Paul Rabasti is Program Director for Cyber and Intelligence within Lockheed Martin's Rotary and Mission Systems. He's also executive sponsor within Lockheed Martin of an event called CodeQuest, which gathers high school students for competitive coding challenges.
2023 was our 11th annual CodeQuest. It's actually a worldwide event. We have more than 19 sites that participate worldwide. I am the exec sponsor for the Hanover, Maryland site. Across the world, though, we have over 1,500 students that participate. And basically, it's a competition, right? So it's a high school level competition where teams of two to three, and we try to really push for and get a fair amount of schools across the areas that are participating. You know, we max it out as two teams per school, just so we can ensure that we're getting good representation across. And basically, it's a 3-hour competition. They work through somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 30, depending on how quickly they can get through some of these challenging problems that are put together through and by sort of Lockheed engineers that are working day-to-day problems. And it allows the students and a sponsor, usually a teacher sponsor from either a teacher of an individual class or sometimes the moderator of a club. The students go off and participate in a couple hour session. And then in addition, we actually give those moderators / teachers some additional tool sets and opportunities to work with Lockheed to further enrich what they're teaching their students. So it's great. It's certainly a competition. You know, we certainly have winners hand out prizes, trophies for all, but in reality, in my mind, the real benefit is not the winning. It's the participation by the broad number of teams. It's getting people and students excited about the overall initiative and the overall process, and perhaps piquing some interest, right? For maybe folks who weren't sure about it, we certainly had this past year in 2023, we had a number of, within the Hanover site, had a number of new teams that had never participated before. And that's exciting, right? Because you're exposing it to folks who may not have had that level of understanding of, hey, what would it mean to be in this type of job, you know, 10 years from now?
And my understanding is that this is a bit of a family affair for you, that your daughter is participating as well?
Yeah, so that was really, so sort of the way things worked out. I was pretty proud of this. So my daughter, she's a junior now in Falston High School, which is in Harford County in Maryland. She took AP Computer Science as a freshman. Actually, my son took AP Computer Science this year as a freshman, my son Finn. To me, those, as I told them, good class to take, even if it's not something you know, you may go into, it's going to be a foundational course that you really want to understand. And so Addie took that freshman year. And then she has a lot of interest, but this past year, her junior year, she said, you know what, there's really no outlet for our school here in terms of just classwork, but really a club environment to work on this. So she's found it, Girls Who Code within the high school. And this is the first year they've done it. The teacher who is the computer science lead for the high school is a personal friend of mine, Jen Canatella, and Jen is the sponsor for it. Natty and Jen worked together and got the charter taken care of, and they're, you know, 12 to 15 strong now. And despite the name, they have, you know, both boys and girls who participate in it, majority girls, but both boys and girls participate in the club. And they then, this past year, as I mentioned, there were some new teams. Two of those new teams that participated in Code Quest this year came from Falston High School. So it was the first, certainly the first participants we've had in the 11 years. And it was also the first participants out of a Harford County High School. So that expansion and growth that, you know, I talked about and is important to me sort of came full circle. And, you know, my daughter got involved, and it was something I certainly was pretty proud of as that team and those teams participated.
Yeah, that's terrific. So what does Lockheed Martin get out of their participation here? Is there a pipeline for potential employees?
Yeah, so we, in general, I think this is a really, really critical and important focus for Lockheed. There's, of course, a pipeline, and we do many things above just cyber. Just CodeQuest. There's another competition called CyberQuest. We do a number of other things that really focus on that outreach into the community to build those pipelines. So out of the CodeQuest and CyberQuest, that's usually where we pull our internships. So we have both high school internships, and then we have college internships as well. And those high school internships come from those events, right? We identify folks who have an interest in those events. And we've had in the past few years, again, just within the Hanover site, one site, you know, 15 to 20 interns every year. And a number of those interns, you know, we've been doing it for a few years. As I said, I've been doing it for 5 years as the exec sponsor. And a number of those interns have now turned into full-time employees. So we had a great story where one of those, Beth was an internship. Beth Mosing was an intern, had an internship with us. She then became a full-time employee. And this past year, I mean, she does such a good job. She went out and presented at an industry event for us, even though she's relatively early career, and really did a great job and got lots of kudos from the event. So the fact that we could nurture and really sort of help have some focus for folks that have an interest in this, and then lead them into, obviously it's a benefit for us if we've seen the good work they've done throughout internships for 4 or 5 years, and all of a sudden now they're, you know, ready to come on and join the workforce. That's great for us. Again, we have, there's, as I mentioned, there's lots of openings, and we want to be able to fill those with folks that we've mentored and know. I mean, that's an added bonus for us, sir.
That's Paul Rabasti from Lockheed Martin. In our continuing series of interviews Rick Howard gathered at the recent AWS Reinforce Conference, Rick speaks with Director of Amazon Security, Jenny Brinkley.
The CyberWire is an Amazon Web Services media partner, and in June 2023, Jen Iben, the CyberWire senior producer, and I traveled to the magical world of Disneyland in Anaheim, California, to attend their AWS Reinforce Conference and talk with senior AWS leaders about the latest developments in securing the Amazon cloud. I got to sit down with Jenny Brinkley, a director at Amazon Security. Before coming to work for Amazon, she was the co-founder at a company called Harvest.ai that used machine learning techniques for behavioral analytics services that Amazon eventually acquired about 7 years ago. I started out by asking Jenny how she decided to create a startup around AI.
Yeah, where all my friends looked at me and said, how did you get into a security job? So at the startup, I did everything but code. So coming up with how we would go to market, how we should be building the service, working with customers on what their needs were for data loss prevention at scale, and how to think about user behavioral analytics when this was the hot topic, on how it could be applied within their business related to cloud-based companies.
So talk to me about that, because I always thought that was going to be the big win for machine learning, that we would be able to take that kind of information, throw it into some machine learning algorithm, and find bad guys. But it hasn't really worked out that well, right?
It's cost. It's compute cost. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you're starting to see this really interesting sweet spot where things are starting to evolve because those compute costs are starting to come down. Mm-hmm. Because when you think about the ingestion of a massive corpus of data and all that data classification that needs to happen, that's where the challenge was. And so that's where I'm really excited to see where the industry's headed, because the compute costs are coming down, the trading models are getting more sophisticated, and you're getting better user interfaces on how to train and use a model to have the right outcomes depending on what you're trying to solve for your whatever thing you're trying to work on.
So your big passionate topic is how do we solve, at least one of your big passionate topics is how do you solve the training gap that we've been talking about for a decade, right? What's the current take? What's the current situation? Are we getting better? Are we getting worse? What's going on there?
So much opportunity, right?
Opportunity. I love your positivism.
Have to. I mean, I am all about, you know, I work in an industry where there's two sides to it. You know, there's some people that like to work in the fear, uncertainty, and doubt space. I like to be in the space where anything's possible. And that's my, how my brain operates. I'm a deep optimist at the end of the day.
I couldn't tell. Okay.
Really? Yeah, does not come across as I speak? So what I love about what I get to do is experiment and try different ways to bring people into security careers, because it completely changed my life. Like in terms of, I've always cared about people. I've always cared about protecting people and helping people, but I never really knew how to apply some of those skills. So if you can find people that are mission-centric, that care, have empathy, want to help, and get them into these types of security careers, it completely evolve the way that your life can change. I mean, these are multi-generational wealth type roles for some people, bring people up above the poverty line. That's where I spend a lot of my time, is the diversification of trying to find people that can get into these types of jobs and get them to on these paths for these jobs of the future.
Well, that's the problem we've had for over a decade. Not only are we not, can't find the people to do it, and we can talk about why that is, right? But then when we do find the people, it's not diverse at all, right? We don't find women and we don't find minorities. And I'm hoping you're going to tell me we're on a better path. What are you going to tell me, Mrs. Optimism?
I love that. I'll take Mrs. Optimism. You know, it's about small acts. I was asked this morning about, you know, let's talk about diversity and security and what's happening. And I think that a lot of people go out and make these big grand statements. We're going to invest X amount of dollars to create X amount of programs. It's going to then, you know, turn X amount of security engineers. But we're not really seeing that pipeline develop the way that it probably could be developing. And so it's taking small little moments and taking small steps like sponsorship, developing opportunities for people to be, and why am I blanking on the word when someone is learning from another person?
Mentorship.
Apprenticeship. Well, apprenticeship,
okay.
Which is a big thing that we do internally at Amazon, is we actually build apprenticeship programs for individuals that want to get in security careers. But a lot of it is just awareness. People don't know that these jobs are available, or they think that it's too hard. In fact, I had somebody today, an AV person that was helping me mic up for a session, who after our session, we were talking about education and awareness and job opportunities. I want to learn about pen testing. How do I do it? So I think it's giving people just some ideas about what's possible, the different types of roles that are available, the ways to get into the industry, removing those barriers, and letting people know what the opportunities really can look like. And that's where I get to spend a lot of my time.
My problem with all that is we've known about those things, and we've been doing those things, and it doesn't seem to be working. It doesn't scale, okay? We have individual successes, like you said, smart start small, but we don't need 10 more people. We need thousands of people. So how do we address that kind of a thing?
I mean, I think it's hard. It starts at the top of a company.
I think you're right about
that. And I think that's about the prioritization of where security fits within someone's ecosystem, how they invest, where they spend the time, how to ensure that you're doing the right things. And I'm very lucky because of who I get to work for. I mean, Steve Schmidt, who's my boss, has been my boss now for the past 4 years. He's chief security officer of Amazon now. So when he talks about the investment of security and where it should exist and how it should be fundamental to everything we do, he sets the tone. So setting the tone, create that security first mindset. We need every single company to set that tone. Security matters. We need to invest. We need to find the right people. We need to create these job opportunities and then putting programs in place that actually make a difference. I think that's the issue. People don't know where to start or where to go. So if you have somebody at the top saying security is our top priority, this is why, this is how, this is what we do, that's the narrative that needs to change.
I think one of the issues, though, is that we keep trying to solve the problem that we've known about for over a decade the same way,
mm-hmm.
right? But we insist that we need somebody with 17 years of experience and 25 certs, and I've said many times today, and we want to pay them $1.50 an hour. Right? No wonder we have a shortage. I'm wondering if we could raise that up, because in my experience, when we hire cybersecurity people, right, we never think about the team. We really think about the individual. Like, we want you to go get another certification. And it's not really improving the team that much. And if you make that individual a superstar or a unicorn or whatever you want to call them, there's a really good chance that Amazon's going to pick them off and bring them into your organization because they're so good now. I'm wondering if we can think differently about this. Train as the team for skills that you miss.
Mm.
Kind of a money ball operation for your cybersecurity team. And if you could do that, then you can do what Billy Beane did in the Oakland A's, which is hire cheaper players who have no experience, but you can train them on the two or three skills that you have and turn them into a team player as opposed to looking for the superstars. I'm wondering what you think about that.
I kind of dig that idea. I will say that we have been changing the ways that we hire. Like, we don't go at it from a perspective of you need this degree, these certs. It's actually about curiosity about how things work.
That's true, yeah.
And how we've been writing our job descriptions and how we go through and we interview people and how we're developing different ways that we attract talent and how we retain talent to stay. But my goal isn't just to hire for Amazon. My goal is to really figure out how can we help every single individual that wants to build on the cloud and have a world-class security team and how to build it right and what kind of programs they can put in place. And so some of the things that we're working through now are how we start externalizing more of those internal programs.
That's the CyberWire's Rick Howard speaking with Director of Amazon Security, Jenny Brinkley. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. Don't forget to check out the Grumpy Old Geeks podcast, where I contribute to a regular segment with Jason and Brian on their show for a lively discussion every week. You can find Grumpy Old Geeks where all the fine podcasts are listed. We'd love to know what you think of this podcast. You can email us at cyberwire@n2k.com. Your feedback helps us ensure we're delivering the information and insights that help keep you a step ahead in the rapidly changing world of cybersecurity. We're privileged that N2K and podcasts like The CyberWire are part of the daily intelligence routine of many of the most influential leaders and operators in the public and private sector, as well as the critical security teams supporting the Fortune 500 and many of the world's preeminent intelligence and law enforcement agencies. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. This episode was produced by Liz Irvin and senior producer Jennifer Iben. Our mixer is Trey Hester, with original music by Elliot Peltzman. The show was written by the CyberWire's editorial team. Our executive editor is Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.